What I like about NWA Power.
You sound 10 times better. I don't know if you have the phone in your mouth, but whatever you're doing, keep doing it.
I just attached it to my throat just to kind of.
Yeah, surgical.
So, what do I like most about NWA Power? Nick Aldis.
Okay.
He's the total package. Like, he can talk, he can work. He fits as the NWA champion. It's a 2019 show in like a 1985 studio. I love Jim Cornette. He's hilarious. Like, he's fantastic on the show. So it's simple. They're just telling really simple stories. Hey, you're the champion. I want to be champion. Let's wrestle. I think maybe because it's outside of this fake it's outside of this fake Wednesday night war between WWE and AEW. And AEW's been fun, but I can't take AEW right now.
Why is that?
So there's an old saying. It's called setting the territory on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Which just basically means you just put, like, you try to put on the best matches, like, literally, like, every match is like a main event match. And, you know, but after you do that for like a weekend or, you know, a month, then what do you do? And I know AEW's new. They're trying to introduce their roster to the audience. I get it. I'm looking at the booking and I'm like the last 3 weeks is like every main event's either been a tag match or a six man match. It's like the neat thing is that like AEW feels like a house show. And the bad thing is like AEW feels like a house show. So I'm just kind of like, okay, so I'm kind of just waiting for the dust to settle and they kind of find their groove with some more stories.
Mm-hmm.
Their women's division is paper thin and it's obvious.
Paper thin.
They need to figure out like what they want to do. Actually, they need to figure out who their mid-card talent is. Because everybody can't be in the main event. So, you know, and the same thing with NXT. I love NXT. I was watching NXT for NXT. It was cool to watch.
You were.
And now, like, every Wednesday is a takeover. And I'm like, it's great that you have this much talent. And you can do this every Wednesday, but I'm like, but every Wednesday? I'm like, I need to breathe. And then just honestly, truthfully, man, Raw, SmackDown's just trash.
Yeah.
It's trash.
So I want to dive into that, but I gotta.
But I went into business for myself.
You did.
And got a promo.
You absolutely did, my friend.
So give us the out of the ring news.
Gosh, there's so much out of the ring news, and for our listening fans, our audience, you know, you've come to learn that this is probably my favorite portion of the show. Not because I get to hear myself talk, that's always a plus. But any preacher likes to hear himself talk. But I you know, revel at that might be the wrong word. Might not even be a word, actually, Dante. You're a wordsmith. Is that the right word to use, revel? No.
No, revel may be good.
Okay. I revel at the chance to. I love wrestlers or wrestling news outside of the ring. It's a real approach. So I got a couple. There were several news stories, man. I had to trim them down to, like, my top three. And again, okay, we haven't done the podcast in almost three weeks.
It's been 2 weeks.
There's a lot that has come through, but I thought that these were worthy to talk about on today's podcast. First up in out of the ring news, my man crush, Randy Orton. And so, of course, he just signed a very lucrative extension with the WWE, signed a new contract, but that's not the caveat. So doing some reading online, and I found out that Randy, you know, rumor and innuendo is that Randy pitched to Vince McMahon to work with the Revival and create a stable with them. And Vince McMahon said no, which is the reason you saw them work together briefly when he was feuding with Kofi, and then all of a sudden it just ended like it never happened. I don't know how you feel about that.
It would definitely help the Revival, because the Revival seems like one of those, just their main roster run, other than the kind of the first couple years of the bad luck with the injuries. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of like, is the Revival just one of those two NXT for the main roster sort of gimmicks? Because they're supposed to be heels, and I think they do silent microphone, but they get no heat. Like, you watch the Revival come out to the ring, and you look at the crowd around them when they come to the ring. They're no boos. Mm-hmm. Dare I say they don't get Baron Corbin heat. Like no heel heat, no cheers, just nothing.
I would have preferred to see them with Randy. And again, I love Randy, and I know he works stiff, and people have an issue with that. In his older years, he really protects himself, and I think it's smart. He doesn't wrestle reckless. But I think that he needed the Revival almost as much as the Revival needed Randy. And I think back to the Legacy. Legacy was great because Randy was able to really be a leader and kind of be a heel within the stable. And I think Randy can go down as one of the best heels in the industry, in the business. But when he's with the stable heel Randy is probably my favorite heel Randy. You know what I'm saying? Because you got the different versions of heel Randy. You've got heel Randy with no hair, heel Randy with a little hair, heel Randy with short hair, heel Randy with a stable. You got heel Randy with a goatee. So you've got a lot of different heel Randys. But that's probably my different my favorite version. Moving on from that, and this is kind of old news now, but when I wrote it down in my notes, it was fresh off the presses. SmackDown, the Saudi show, Vince McMahon. For those that don't know, I'm sure you know by now, but we'll do a quick recap. After the Saudi show, Crown Jewel or Biggest Jewel, I forgot the name of it, whatever it's called, who has the most jewels, Jewels of Hearts, Saudi show that WWE has in Saudi Arabia. The wrestlers were, a lot of the wrestlers, a good majority, were left there. They couldn't leave. The reports came out initially that it was because of something with the airplane, the engine. But more came out of the story. It had to deal with money and Vince McMahon. A lot financial, right? And so the Prince of Saudi Arabia just wouldn't let those guys leave. People like Brock Lesnar, Vince, hopped on their private jets. I just found out that it's a part of Brock's contract to have a private jet for these venues and all venues. So they were able to leave, but a lot of the other guys and gals were stuck on the ramp because of what seemed to be money issues between Vince and the WWE and Saudi Arabia. Them not paying Vince, you know, what should have been paid, what was owed, what was due. What do you think about that, man? Do you think that this will affect, first, a 30-second, did you like or dislike the Saudi show? Or do you think that this snafu with the Prince and Vince, you think that cause a rift down the line somewhere?
The Saudi show was okay. I don't know. You know, I think that, you know, So as I heard it so eloquently put, Saudi bag season is kind of weird, because you have some wrestlers who choose not to go mm-hmm. because of their own personal beliefs, like mm-hmm. Daniel Bryan. Mm-hmm. Then you have some wrestlers who it's recommended they not go because mm-hmm. of their ethnicity, mm-hmm. i.e. Sami Zayn. Mm-hmm. And it's until this year, which, you know, it's unfortunate that this got buried because of this possible, you know, like, issue, you know, because there was, you know, a group that couldn't go because of their gender. But I don't know if anybody definitively knows the truth. Because one thing I read that it was Hugo Savinovich, the Spanish broadcast announcer.
Yeah.
This thing, and I'm like, why would he know about that?
Right. I think I asked myself the same question.
So I'm kind of like, you know, maybe it was mechanical failure, but you are in a country where the ruler of the country has absolutely no qualms about, you know, having someone killed, and we know that because he had an American journalist killed in a Turkish consulate. So it's just kind of like, you know, is this money worth it? So I don't think anybody knows really why they were left on that tarmac. It wasn't a good look, though.
No, it wasn't.
For those that were able to charter their own transportation. And what the good look was, what the WWE kind of put out, it was something like, to those who it mattered most to get their own transportation and try to make it to Friday night, which I have a solution to their Friday nights during Saudi bag season.
You want
Friday night?
Go ahead.
It's simple. Friday night SmackDown, when they're in Saudi Arabia, that Friday night SmackDown should just be ladies' night.
It makes sense.
Since it is obvious they're not going to do another all-ladies pay-per-view, you have a pay-per-view caliber ladies. And not that the guys who choose not to go can't work, but just have that show centered around. And I mean, bring all the ladies. Bring the girls from NXT, bring the women from SmackDown, bring the fly the women from NXT UK out, and have, I mean, do like the women's version of Clash of Champions. Have it be a pay-per-view caliber show featuring your women during Saudi bag season and pay them like it's a pay-per-view.
The beautiful mess that we got from this was the first two, the SmackDown and the Raw directly after that. You know, we got that beautiful NXT invasion, which has gotten a little watered down since then. But I don't want to dive too deep into that yet. I got one more story.
Okay.
My uncle.
I hope you're going where I think.
I don't know where you think I'm going. I'm not Professor X. You're not Scott. You're not Cyclops. my uncle, who I just recently called him my uncle, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Is this where you wanted to go?
That's not where I thought you were going.
Oh, okay. But I
don't think I know about this, so I'm okay. Curious now.
He has a new, on the WWE Network, Stone Cold is getting a new interview-style TV show. It's going to be called Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Broken Skull Sessions. And he is interviewing not only wrestlers, but a lot of people who are in the entertainment world. Kind of has that Chris Jericho vibe. His first guest. And so this is cool. This is great for Steve. I want to say I appreciate and love how he's been able to redefine himself outside of the square circle and really get into this bag of media personality. But his first guest, Dante, mm-hmm. none other than Mark Calloway. We know him as the Phenom. The Undertaker. I believe this the first episode airs November 24th, about a week or so from today. I don't know, 10 days from today. I've got some different thoughts about that, but what do you feel about this? Is this your first time hearing this story?
No. I did hear about the Broken Skull Sessions. Okay. I didn't know his first guest was gonna be Taker though.
Yeah, it's gonna
that should be interesting.
And the spinning this as very candid, open. It's not gonna be, you know, kayfabe, right? He's talking to Mark Calloway, and he would be sharing stories. I just hope that they don't turn this into a WWE thing and protect their brand or protect the character. I really hope that, and I enjoy Bruce Pritchard. And Eric Bischoff and these other podcasts, because they're real, they witness, they notice, and they have no bias. Even before Bruce was working with WWE, he was careful with the way he answered things. He never destroyed somebody or the company. He was honest, you know.
I disagree. He destroyed a couple people. He destroyed Vince Russo.
He constantly destroys Vince Russo. But I think that Vince Russo's mother destroys Vince Russo.
Probably. Bro. Yeah, he destroyed Mark Miro too. But no, I'm gonna tell you. If that's what you're hoping for, especially with this first interview with Mark Calloway, prepare to be disappointed because I don't know a guy working in that company who's more WWE than The Undertaker.
Vince McMahon, no. You're right. I agree. And
yeah, I think like two guys that will in any form, and I've Taker doesn't do many interviews.
He doesn't.
But there, YouTube Undertaker interviews, you'll find them. He and Mark Henry protect that company like no one else. And so, I'm curious to see, like, if they talk about, like, his beginnings in Texas and what was his name in Memphis? Was he the Master Disaster in Memphis? He had like a Mad Max character.
It didn't work out.
I remember that very, very vaguely from my childhood when Memphis Wrestling would come on syndication on, I think it came on Channel 50. And then me, Mark Callis from WCW,
mm-hmm.
Who was part of the Dangerous Alliance.
Bring back.
So I'm curious to see how much he talks about that. I mean,
well, I think that's the intriguing thing about Taker as your first guest is no matter what Taker talks about, even if he doesn't go into the depths of the WWE, just to hear him speak about his experiences, like I'm game for that. Even if, to be honest, he protects the company, I would rather hear this conversation from him than a Mark Henry, because Taker for so long hasn't been protected. He hasn't done open interviews, and he's one of my all-time favorite wrestlers. But not just that, he's been with the company almost 40 years. In very little interviews. I would love to. This would be good, and I think that Austin. Do you listen to Austin's podcast?
I have not in a while.
Same here.
But I want to say even before I started listening to Pritchard. Steve's podcast actually kind of got me into listening to the wrestling podcast.
Steve was one of the first major guys. Because you had people like Colt Cabana who have been doing it for a little bit. But Steve was one of the first major guys to really do it. And of course, Chris Jericho followed suit after that. Jim Ross came after that. But Steve was, I want to say, if you're looking at big names, pioneers, doing podcasts as a wrestler, as a major name, really known, it was Steve. And I listened to him when he first started, like his first ones, crap. But to like hear the evolution, he's become a much, much better interviewer, podcaster, and I'm excited to listen to this podcast to see his growth. And then, of course, to hear Mark. So.
And you are getting Mark.
You're getting Mark.
You're not getting the Undertaker. So that should be cool.
Yeah. And that, if you were getting Taker, you would get Paul. Paul Bearer. We get Paul Bearer coming out. All right, man. You've got a gamut of stuff. We're 21 minutes in.
Yeah,
there's some good stuff that you have, man. You want to dive into weeklies?
Well, before we dive into weeklies, it was something out of the ring that I thought you were going to talk about that you didn't mention.
What's that?
You didn't mention ACH, aka Jordan Miles.
I haven't heard anything else. What happened?
You haven't heard? Oh, wow. Well, Pastor Dante's got some outside the ring news for you, brother. Ooh,
give me the tea, Pastor. We should call this the tea with the pastor. What is the tea, Pastor Dante?
He quit.
Not surprising.
In a very expletive laden video that he put on Twitter.
What did he say exactly?
He said, "F the WWE, I quit. I don't need to be akin to, you know, racial prejudice and, you know, all this other stuff." He says, "So I'm not going back."
So when was this?
Oh, that's a good question.
I'm gonna type it in real quick.
Yeah, I'm not sure when it was. It came across my
one day ago. Here's the thing. Here's my thing. My issue. I don't want to say issue, but here's my thing with Jordan Miles. I think he was looking for something that he didn't get, and because he didn't get it, he took his ball and went home. So I think that he was trying to ride the wave of Black empowerment, I'm being mistreated, which can be fine, you know, if that's true. I'm not saying he's lying, and I'm not saying he's fabricating. Racism is real. I believe that. I believe we've talked about this, you and I, the inherent racism that's in WWE from top down. But because I know this, you know this, before any shirt goes out, it has to be approved by the talent. Like, I just don't believe that went over his... I do not believe that went over his head. Because I've heard countless stories of talent saying how they adjusted, they didn't like something, right? And it had to be approved by the talent. I feel, this is the reflection of Desmond, that he approved it, and I think that somebody maybe got in his ear, in his inner circle, like, yo, you need to say something about this. That's racist. It's racism. You gonna stand for that? And then I think somebody gassed him up to take a bullet that he didn't have to take. You know what I'm saying? Like, because WWE is racist, but I think that he was in a good spot where he was at. And there was room for him to grow up in the company and go up in the company to kiss that brass ring. But I don't know. That's just how I feel. You're completely silent. So
that's I'm reading.
Definitely disagree with me.
I'm like, no, I don't know. See,
you're like Desmond is an Uncle Tom.
I knew it was
something about you. I knew it was a reason why you like white shoes.
Oh man, you know what, man? I knew there was
a reason why you liked Friends.
Oh my God! I don't think I've seen a whole episode of Friends. I did when it was Living Single, but
that's funny. That's where it came from.
But you know what? I don't like stories like this because I don't know if we
get the whole really story.
Know the whole story?
I hear you.
Like I saw one tweet. This one cat tweeted. Like when CM Punk left the company, he was like a stand-up guy, whatever. When Stone Cold left the company, he was called a rebel. But then when ACH left the company, you know, he called a punk and this, that, and the other. Can anybody see the difference between the three? And I'm kind of like, well, yeah, but I think that all three left the company for different reasons.
Yeah.
Like CM Punk, and I remember listening to Colt Cabana's podcast, like that first interview he did, and even Moxley's interview on Jericho's podcast. And Moxley didn't really tell us anything we didn't already know.
Exactly. He didn't. He did.
I mean, like we knew that, you know, Jonathan Good, a.k.a. John Moxley, a.k.a. Dean Ambrose, was given Gaga BS. And I remember, look, fans, listen to the archives. I'll tell you, I can tell you right now, there are at least three podcasts that we've done where I've mentioned my disdain for Dean Ambrose because they wanted to call him a lunatic and he was just silly. But, you know, if my question is, other than the t-shirt, what else was going on?
Because there had to be something else going on for you to.
Yeah, that's my question. Like other than the t-shirt, what else was going on? Because he talks about how he refused to work for racists and he hates everything WWE stands for and he held us back. I want to say somewhere he called like Jay Lethal Uncle Tom or something.
Yeah, and that was a couple weeks ago. That's when we first broke the story.
So
he mentioned a few people, you know, Booker T, I think Mark Henry, Jay Lethal, Uncle Tom. That's in the archives, guys. You can go back to our last episode, I believe. We talked about that.
So that's my thing. I'm like, okay, so kind of what went on? And listen, here's the thing. If I think some talent, and we'll get to it in a minute. WWE has an embarrassment of riches. And when you're that stacked, it's hard to get time. It's hard enough to get time if you are, you know, brown skinned and you don't want to do a stereotypical gimmick. I get it. I would still argue, I'm not sure if he went about it the right way.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm not disagreeing with it. Can I quarterback this thing?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, that's all I gotta say about it.
I just feel like
this story and then the Saudi story is just too much incomplete stuff. That, you know, in 20 years, somebody will do a podcast and then we'll know the rest about it.
You know the rest. But we have to report on it because we are media personalities, Dante, in the wrestling industry that WWE doesn't listen to. We are
broadcast professionals.
You are. I'm a freaking professional, Mom. I made it. And I think Humberto is very popular. And apparently, Paul Heyman does too. He is in line for a major push, along with Buddy Murphy. From Paul Heyman on the Raw side. Paul really likes Humberto. You've seen him, for those watching, you're going to see, you've been seeing Humberto battle AJ Styles for two matches already. I think he came out on top in that six-man tag. You're going to see them going head-to-head for the United States Championship, I want to say for a while now, because Paul is really big on Humberto. I guess he thinks he's handsome as well. You like Humberto? You like the way he looks? You like the jib of his dance? I don't know. I'm sorry.
I would take Humberto Carrillo, and one of my favorite talents at NXT, only because I was such a huge fan of his uncle way back in the day. I would take Angel Garza, and I would put them in a tag team, and I would like give him some like Rico Suave sort of gimmick, because those are two handsome young Hispanic men. I don't know how ethnically biased that just sounds, but I mean, but part of Angel Garza's gimmick is that he walks to the ring and lets a pretty lady in the audience kiss him on the cheek. How 1980s is that?
I think that when you are Latino in the WWE, I won't say in the WWE, professional wrestling, or if you are Samoan, you know, I think that you have a certain swagger to you that Vince knows how to use that. No, I think about The Rock. I think about it's another sexy Samoan. That sounded funny. Sexy Samoan. What's his name?
Roman Reigns.
Roman Reigns, yeah. And then what was my guy with the backstabber? Who?
That was Carlito.
Carlito, man. Like, I loved his swag. And, you know, so I think that Vince knows how to use that. Hopefully, he does it right with Humberto.
I really want him to come back. He don't want to leave Puerto Rico.
Yeah, he's doing good over there. He's doing good.
Yeah, he ain't leaving Pops.
NXT TakeOver. I think that at the first run, beautiful accident, right? We talk about those Saudi guys stuck on the runway. Yeah. It allowed for a great angle. We talked about it off the podcast on the phone. What do you think about it now? Has it lost kind of its flavor?
A little bit. This is once again kind of setting the territory on fire. Because when it happens, like, oh my God, that's so awesome. Man, Shayna Baszler has no reason being on SmackDown, but she beat up Bayley and it's great, but why is she here? So you kind of, you know, it's like, so where do you go? It's like, we know the cynic in me is just kind of like, well, this is for Survivor. It took me, I just had the process. I'm like, oh, this is for a Survivor Series. And, you know, okay, so what's going to happen after Survivor Series? Uh-huh. Then no more interpromotional. And it's kind of, and you know, one thing, I don't have an issue with things kind of being out of the continuum. Uh-huh. Because it was kind of like, well, these brands are exclusive and neither the twain shall meet. Oh, but except for Survivor Series. Which is fine. I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with, you know, Mia Yim and Shayna Baszler, like, you know, we hate each other, but you know what? We fighting for the black and gold brand, so we'll like each other enough for Survivor Series. My question is, how was this? I'm curious to see what NXT TakeOver War Games is going to look like.
Yeah, because, that's a good point.
So, because I would be like, okay, so if we're going to do this every Survivor Series, I think they should move War Games like before the Royal Rumble. So one thing I did see, my big takeaway from the weekly is I am completely ready for this all ladies War Games match with my new woman crush Rhea Ripley. I am on that, like, white on rice on a paper plate in a snowstorm. I'm ready for that.
With them putting so much emphasis on Survivor Series with NXT, will some attention be taken away from War Games, which has been a staple of NXT for, gosh, since they've been in Inception, right?
No, this is the... Oh, when did they bring War Games back? I want to say they brought War Games back like after the formation of the Undisputed Era. So that might have been like maybe 3 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago.
Okay.
Which, man, that was just like, I was just like, you know, Triple H, just bring, because I feel like, you know, Triple H is like my older light-skinned brother because we both came up loving NWA wrestling. And I'm just like, come on, Triple H, just come and take my money, bro. Yes, please. Bring back War Games. Because War Games was, I want to say, of all the old NWA / WCW pay-per-views from back in the day, yeah, War Games was probably my favorite. It was extraordinarily clunky because you had these two rings. And ironically enough, the first person to figure out, hey, we can use both rings in a wrestling match is Chris Jericho. He and the late great Eddie Guerrero decided that they were going to use both rings in their match. And I remember him talking about, he's like, you know what? Nobody told us we couldn't, so we did. And that match was fantastic. So that's neat. And it's like, but the one thing I put is like, WWE is going to show the wrestling world the one thing that they have more of than All Elite Wrestling. And that is depth.
Okay. You talk about depth. And I think this is a good segue to your segment, Argue Me. You asked the question, do you still need baby faces and heels and kayfabe to tell good stories in pro wrestling? I'm going to answer that and argue that you. I'm going to say you do. And you mentioned AEW. Looking at their product from this past week, you haven't watched it. Over the past 2 weeks, what has really engaged me is the storyline between Cody Rhodes and Chris Jericho. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if it's a heel versus a babyface. It's just really good storytelling. And I think that's what makes it... I think that's what some professional wrestling... And if you look at the big boy on the block, WWE, I think that's what they miss a lot of. That heel versus babyface. That kayfabe. And we know Cody's role in AEW in real life. You know, Chris Jericho's role, you know, as a talent. But gosh, man, they're really telling a really good story. This past week was really impressive. They've doubled down on that. They on defining baby faces and heels and storylines, Dante. Like even the stuff with Jon Moxley and Kenny Omega has been superb. You know, just the story alone, like the
can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
And this is my one question about Omega and Moxley. Is Jon Moxley a heel?
I don't know.
So what makes that story so compelling?
I just said the storyline, the way they're telling it. So you have to go back. You have to watch AEW from this past week.
Okay. I get the story with Jericho and Cody, which is ingenious because I watched the contract signing. And like Tony Schiavone in the limo with Cody, mm-hmm. and I'm watching it, and like kind of simultaneously, I'm looking at social media, and I'm just like, oh my God, that's so original, that's so unique, and I'm like, bro, that's Ric Flair '94 Starrcade in the limo with Tony Schiavone before his match. It's the exact same story before his match with Vader, and if he doesn't win the championship, then he can never challenge for it again. I'm like, no, that's not new, bro. You're just probably 17, but anyway, it was still well done.
Well done.
Because I think you and I have had this conversation before. Like, there's really nothing new you can do in the business. It's just how well you do stuff that's been done already. Yep. It was masterfully done.
Yeah.
And somehow, Cody's convinced the audience that the corporate company owner can be a babyface. Because that's what Cody is.
And I think that speaks to Chris being able to play a heel. So, goddamn well, man.
You can't. And so, here's the thing. Because we're not arguing about this. Because I agree. He is the perfect example. Because I follow Chris Jericho on Instagram. And he posts some of the most baby face. The only heel thing he's posted on Instagram is when he interviewed Donald Trump Jr. for his podcast.
Oh, man. I said the same thing to myself when I looked at that. I was like, I may not be listening to this podcast anymore.
He posts the most baby face stuff on Instagram. He's the most baby face guy on his podcast. But he gets heat as a pro wrestler. That's proof that kayfabe isn't dead.
Oh, definitely. I think you need it. I think you need it to tell good stories and to sell good product. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And so here's the thing. I know exactly what WWE is trying to do, but they don't do it well. And if you don't get what they're trying to do, they're trying to present a work as an athletic contest between two combatants and allowing the fans to choose who they want to like. But they don't do it well. Because here's the thing. I'll never forget, I might have been 7 or 8 years old, and this was kind of like the tail end of the old Turner Studios NWA show. Mm-hmm. And this white kid has on a suit and a Rolex, and he has a sign. And it says, "Dad, I spent my college tuition to get a Rolex like Ric Flair." So even at the height of Flair and the Horsemen's heeldom, they got cheered. Because fans are going to choose who they want. I'm a perfect example. When I was that young, man, I love Dusty Rhodes, but I was I didn't like it when Flair and the Horsemen beat up Dusty, but I accepted it. I was so into Flair and the Horsemen when I was small. And then when I would watch WWE, I was into Randy Savage. And in the mid-80s, Randy Savage was a heel. Like, I love the Million Dollar Man. Just, I wish I had his money. You know, I was poor and Gary. Of course I wanted his money.
He wishes he had his money.
Yeah. But the thing is, I chose.
But I think that, to a good point you're making, I don't think everybody can be a true heel. I think that just because you call somebody a heel, that doesn't really make them a heel. I think that some people are naturally baby faces, and I think that some people are naturally heels. What would you say?
I was going to say, I blame the NWO for the advent of the cool heel.
Oh, the cool heel?
Mm-hmm, it's their fault.
I blame Eric Bischoff. No, I take that back. I blame Vince Russo.
I blame the NWO. It's all the NWO.
I think about The Miz. He's a great heel because he's naturally a heel.
He is. And you know the evolution of The Miz, and they should not have just let him go straight babyface. The Miz, just like Kevin Owens, to an extent, just like Sami Zayn, just like Samoa Joe, even AJ Styles when AJ Styles is a heel, they're heels in character, but they get cheered because they get respect. Like, The Miz gets mad respect. And he gets that respect because of the career he's been able to have.
And not just that. I think definitely, not taking away from the career, but I also think, in addition to, it's because they're so great, it comes natural. Like, AJ is naturally a heel. And he's just, even when he's a baby face, I'm like, nah, G, you seem like manipulative in some kind of way. Even when Samoa Joe, he's just natural. Even when he talks, the way he walks, I look at him now on WWE backstage with a brace on his arm and a suit and brown leather shoes in a chair. He looks like a heel. He looks like he's about to take over the world. He looks like Dr. Robotnik.
And he's so cool when he does it. So and along those lines, like, yep. I've been putting my eye on this Leo Rush.
Yeah.
But he's so much better when he's a heel. He's a terrible baby face. I don't like. He's not like, he's cut these promos since he's been Cruiserweight champion, and I love the fact that I get to see him in the ring again. I didn't realize he was so young. Where was I? I'm trying to think. Where was I listening to? Was I in Baltimore listening to an interview with Leo Rush? No, I was going to Indianapolis, and he and Velveteen Dream came up together in Maryland, and I remember his Ring of Honor run. I'm like, and he was talking about he was 19 in Ring of Honor doing that. And he was great in the ring. So I'm glad, I'm happy to see him in the ring working, because I love Leo's work. And he's one of those guys that's really, really, and he's really small. But he has this ability to wrestle so big, you forget that he's like 5'7". Right?
Mm-hmm. You know, but, this may be a funny comparison. Not career-wise, I think he's doing better than this person's career. But who he reminds me of is a young D'Lo Brown. Just because D'Lo, to me, you know, it was awesome in the ring. I just kind of remember... D'Lo could do.
I agree, man. D'Lo was bad. When D'Lo, like, I see champion 50 Cent bulletproof vest D'Lo.
Yeah.
He was nice.
He was nice, man. He was nice.
Like, pre-I started eating donuts D'Lo Brown, yeah, he was nice.
Like, I started eating donuts every day.
And D'Lo, so the evolution of the Frog Splash, if you go back and you look at tape of Eddie Guerrero and Art Barr from AAA, and Art Barr taught Eddie to do the Frog Splash. Art looked like a frog when he jumped from the top rope. And the way he does it was really the same way D'Lo did it, and also the same way Leo Rush does it. Like, they do the frog, and Eddie's Frog Splash was good, and I've seen Rob Van Dam do his Frog Splash in person, and my goodness, that man gets so much hype off the top rope, it looks like he's going to touch the lights that are above the ring. But their Frog Splash isn't the pure Frog Splash, if I could have a meta discussion for 20 seconds about a finishing maneuver. Like, the way you see Leo kind of, like, cock his arms between his legs, looking like a frog.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his Frog Splash is so good. But, like, can I get that work in the ring with, like, Bobby Lash, Heater, heel Leo Rush too? Because, like, he's really boring when he's not a heel. Like, the in-ring work is fun. I mean, he is an impeccable in-ring worker. But when he's not being a jerk, he's not fun.
It doesn't. When he's not being a jerk, it doesn't work. That rhymes.
Exactly. Before we get to the third one, have you seen John Moxley in New Japan?
I have.
Okay. So we can talk about. I just want to know if we can talk about it. So let's go to the third one. Fight me on this. Tell me who else AEW should with the alleged mass exodus. Who should they take other than Rusev?
Oh man. Hold on 1 second. I'm typing something. I'm typing notes because when I publish this podcast in the description, I want to write down what we talked about.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So Rusev is a great example.
Before you answer, let me give you just one more frame. This is kind of like of all the guys that have been rumored or alleged to want to leave.
I would say Rusev is perfect. Rusev is perfect. This Rusev, not the Russian Bulgarian, whatever. I like this Rusev. I like the Rusev with the mustache and that has a mouth that talks and who can move in the ring. I like, he has character. Rusev is funny in real life. I like him. But I think another person that AEW could take and that will fit is Luke Harper. I could see Luke Harper in the AEW ring because they don't have too many big men. And I think with Harper's in-ring style, his ability, and his in-ring presence, I think he could be a general for AEW, but I also think that he could be a good talent because, correct me if I'm wrong, I can't count on two hands the big men that AEW has. They have a lot of small guys.
I agree with that. The only reason I would disagree with you is just long term.
Because
Harper's 30, 38, 39.
But then think about it. Okay, I would push back and say Y2J, one, and then two, their schedule is not as grueling as WWE's schedule.
Right. So, I think you might actually got me on that.
Yeah. So the lifespan of a WWE talent at 38 is what, a year? But the lifespan of a 38-year-old in AEW could be, you can stretch out to 4 or 5 years maybe. Because you're not on the road, you know? I think it'd be perfect.
And I think, like, everybody who's been rumored to want to go, like the Revival, right? That's been a big, you know, they've wanted to leave. Sin Cara just asked for his release.
Yeah,
he got. And my thing is, with like the Revival, like one thing the AEW has decent depth with is their tag teams.
Definitely.
So, like, where do you fit if you're the Revival?
I don't think they fit in that system.
I think Sin Cara might work.
Mm-hmm.
Because one thing about it, if he doesn't want to go with the mask, he can go back to some. If he doesn't want to go with the mask, or do a pure traditional luchador gimmick in AEW, he could go back and do the Conan and Jace Hunico gimmick that he did before he put on the mask when they fired the first in Copper. Which just FYI, if I could just nerd out for like 10 seconds, I had no idea the Tongaloa, a.k.a. Tamatanga's brother in Gorilla's Destiny in New Japan. I had no idea that that was Camacho when I was Hunico and Camacho. I'm like, y'all got a Fijian dude to play a Mexican dude. I'm like, come on,
WWE. WWE anyway, is good for that.
Yeah, but I think Rusev is the only guy that I would take from WWE other than John Moxley and give him a serious push.
Yeah.
Because I'll say this, the one thing that AEW doesn't want to do is they don't want to run into being the place where either peed off ex-WWE employees or WWE washouts go. Because that would definitely hurt them.
I think they've been doing a good job of being selective. I would assume that they've been having the gamut, you know, knocking at the door saying we want to come over. But I think they've been selective. And I think they've said more no's than they have said yeses. What do you think?
That and Vince is saying he wants to go where? Put 3 more years on his contract. You were injured, damn it.
I like this last point you have for the argument. New Japan John Moxley is better than AEW. I saw a little bit of the John Moxley and Kenny Omega. So before I kind of go into the John Moxley version, the New Japan version of John Moxley, I will say I'm not a fan of the barbed wire wrestler, the true hardcore. Like when you're talking about Cactus Jack and ECW days, talking about Sandman, like that's not my preference for wrestling.
Me neither.
You know, so when I see matches with guys, barbed wire to the face and to the back and bleeding, that's just not my style. To me, it's reckless and it's dangerous. And it's I sound like such a purist. It's untasteful. I sound like such a bougie wrestling fan. Charles is distasteful. I said untasteful. I meant distasteful. So, but I will say I enjoy the few matches I did see of John Moxley in New Japan a few months ago before AEW was a thing. I mean, he was doing his little tour. I enjoyed that John Moxley because he was a little more free. I think that when you put something on John Moxley and say he has to be this, he's not as enjoyable. But when you just let him go, I don't know. I think maybe AEW is scared to do that. I don't know. It's definitely 10 times better than Dean Ambrose in WWE. Oh, my gosh. But I don't think it's as good to me as New Japan John Moxley. But I'm enjoying the guy that we see every Wednesday night on AEW. It's okay. You know, he reminds me almost, Dante. And I don't know how you'll take this. Whether this would be you agree with this or you'll be egregious to it. John Moxley now reminds me of Steve Austin right after he won King of the Ring. And he was, I think he had a few feuds with Bret Hart. I forgot when the Bret Hart feuds came, either before King of the Ring or after.
It came after King.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. This helps me with my point. Stone Cold Steve Austin wasn't Stone Cold Steve Austin yet. He was still Stunning Steve trying to figure out Stone Cold. But like 97, that's when, this is Stone Cold freaking 97, 98. You know, it was a little bit after King of the Ring. I think King of the Ring was 96, if I'm not mistaken. The heels of 95. Yeah. Like 97, 98, Austin, this is Stone Cold. You know what I'm saying? He rode that wave. Pre that, you were just kind of watching the guy figure out who he was going to be. And I think that's what John Moxley is right now. He has an idea within this company, just trying to figure it out. And I think that's where he is right now. And I think you give him another year, definitely another two. I think he'll be A1. I think that he'll be the biggest draw for the company. Not right now, though.
Yeah, I can see your point. I think I like New Japan John Moxley simply because the style he's allowed to work in New Japan being able to work stiff and work snug. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, to me, in the ring, he just has so much more chemistry. And the only guy I've seen him work has been Juice Robinson. It was kind of over the New Japan U.S. title. He's got such great chemistry with Juice Robinson. More chemistry, in my opinion, than he does with Kenny Omega. But the irony is he doesn't really talk in New Japan. And I think the promos he's been cutting in AEW has been fantastic. But I just think the matches in New Japan have been better. Mm. And I will say this kind of one last thing about AEW. First of all, that the Jon Moxley promo that he cut the show after Halloween. No, he cut it on Halloween about Kenny Omega. That was the best promo I heard him cut since he was in the Shield. In addition, the promo Cody cut before Full Gear was probably the best mic work I think I've ever heard him do. And I think that's when I text you, I don't see how Vince saw Cody and didn't see a world champion.
I can see how. I can honestly.
Help me.
I mean, I don't agree with it, but I think that when you look at, and I'm going to get kind of biblical here, and I don't know, maybe because we're preachers, this might be appropriate. The Bible says that because Jesus was from his hometown, because mm-hmm. they knew him, and they were familiar with him, he was only able to do small miracles, like heal a few sick folk and kind of go on about his business. Because they could not receive who he was, he couldn't raise the dead there, he couldn't open blinded eyes, walk on water, the major miracles he did in other surrounding areas, he couldn't do there because, not because of his inability, but because the people couldn't receive him. And I think that there's a sense of, I know you so well that I overlook who you really are. You know what I'm saying? I think the hardest people to impress sometimes are your family or your friends, people who know you. And I think that Cody was subject to that. I think that they saw him grow up. They knew his dad. And I think that he literally grew up there, not just as a son of the company, but as a talent. And I think that oftentimes you get overlooked. Now, you can say this. You got guys like Randy, who did the opposite, who shined. But I would say people like Randy didn't want to be a wrestler. Charlotte didn't want to be a wrestler. They came into it almost out of, I have no other options, or I kind of, it wasn't like Cody wanted to wrestle. He wanted to be like his dad. Mm-hmm. And I think that.
Who did you say didn't want to wrestle in addition to Charlotte?
Randy.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. So that, because yeah. People will say, oh, what about Randy? What about Charlotte? They didn't want that life. I think that WWE or Vince would dismiss a Cody because he's there. He was always there and he wanted to be there. And because of that, they booked him a certain way. Like, oh, that's just Cody. You know what I'm saying? It takes you to step outside of the zone of people that know you or the system you grew up in order for you to excel. I honestly think, Dante, that him making that move was the best thing for him because WWE would have never recognized him, nor would he have recognized himself. I think we would have missed the genius of Cody Rhodes. And we saw glimpses of it. He was able to make chicken shit great. Stardust, the bag over the face Cody, face mask Cody. He was able to make some basic stuff great. But I think that we would have missed the great genius of him had he not made that jump. And I think that that's the way Vince saw it. Like, that's just Cody. And I think he had to leave, you know?
I agree.
Ooh, wow. That's, I agree. That's two agreements in one night. What, yeah. What the hell is going on?
I don't know. I can see that. Cody is like the poster child. And Cody said it. And I want to say Bruce Pritchard said it too. And that is, once Vince sees you a certain way,
yep.
It's hard for him to, it's hard to change his mind. And there have been few guys that changed his mind. I will say one guy that changed his mind was Triple H. But yeah, so Anything else, sir?
I don't even think. I think Randy kind of saw it as well, you know?
No, man. Vince loved Randy when he walked in that door. He's like, look at him.
No, I'm saying I think Randy saw it in Cody.
Randy said it. Yeah, I think I recall an interview with Randy where he, when the whole legacy thing was put together, it might be on his DVD. Randy was like, yeah, I think Cody is going to be a world champion someday. He said as much.
Yeah, and I think that, yeah. So that was all I had. I could don't mention Randy. I'll go on for days. We give an honorable mention. I didn't put this in the Outside the Ring news. CM Punk did make his debut on WWE backstage.
I guess I'm gonna have to watch WWE backstage or not. I'm not.
I tried to watch like 15 minutes of it, and it's boring to me.
I'm just not. I'm gonna be honest. I was kind of over CM Punk after I heard the Colt Cabana
interview. Yeah, he rubbed a lot of people.
Yeah, I felt that it was a little. He came off a little punkish. There, I said.
Well, his name is CM Punk, so I guess so.
Yeah, that's true. He is the chick magnet.
Chick magnet, Chicago made. It means chick magnet. It means chick magnet. Sign us off, man. Well, before we go off, listen, there are a lot of wrestling events coming to the Chicago area. AEW has two. One's going to be in Champagne in Chicago as well. I think Survivor Series is coming.
Yeah, Survivor Series is coming.
So people, we're not making any promises, but we're going to try to be at one of them. One out of the three. Maybe two out of three.
Man, I may save my pennies because, man, I want to go to War Games because I've never seen a War Games in person.
I've never seen a Giant in person either. So I kind of
want to go to Survivor Series, but I really want to see War Games more than I want to go to Survivor Series.
So maybe we'll try to plan a live podcast. I don't know what that looks like.
But I can tell you this: the real world's champion, my daughter, will be in tow with me for either event I go to.
Check us out, the archives. This episode is brought to you by Dante's house and Dante's wife. Thank you for lending your husband to us. And check us out: Apple Podcast, Spotify, to listen to some of our other most recent episodes. And great podcast, great conversation. Subscribe to it, people. Like us, you know. Let people know that you're listening to us. And if you like wrestling, if you're a wrestling fan, or you know people who like wrestling, AEW, WWE, WCW, NWA, NXT, DDT, TNT, POW.
MLW.
POP, a.k.a.
NJPW.
We talk about it all, man. So sign us out, man. Sign us out, buddy.
Well, you can find me on your Twitter machine at PastorDDP.
Yeah.
If you are in any way, shape, or form interested in college football, please check out my stuff on SaturdayBliss.com. Check out the Triple Option podcast on Spotify as I sell my gimmicks to you. Look, with all due respect to WWE Hall of Famer Special Delivery Jones, my congregants of the Camel Clutch, until next time, watch as much wrestling as possible.